Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. So Neil's made a new friend.
I have.
Would you like to share with the class about your new friend?
It's not exactly a friend. We're on first name basis.
That's a friend.
And then I got invited to the gaff.
You did. Close friends, if anything.
So I found a garden centre nearer to home that does rubs. The Angus and Oink rubs. So I went to get them.
Again, not sponsored.
Yeah. Not yet.
Bleep that name.
Yeah. Yeah, long story short, there was another guy there looking at the Angus and Oink rubs and we talked about rubs.
Shout out Michael.
Shout out to Michael. His wife wasn't pleased at first.
Well, she was trying to look around the garden centre, you know?
And she kept coming back. She kept coming back and then going back off and then coming back. And she was like, how have you stood here for 15 minutes talking about rubs?
Yeah. You
easily.
You were stood there for ages talking about rubbing your weeds together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking face on you.
Am I wrong?
And then it ended with, they were like, next time we do a barbecue, would you want to come and have some meat?
Yeah. But the thing is, you never got his number. So, Michael, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Reach out.
Yeah. I did say this is probably going to get discussed on the pod.
Yeah.
When you find out.
Now, you're actually leaving out a crucial detail to this story.
The shop worker.
Oh, yeah. No, I forgot all about tell him about the shop worker.
So at one point when his wife came back and she was like, for fuck's sake, sort of thing. Then a worker came over and he was like, oh, is it the Angus and Oink rubs you like? This is a good one. Like, I've had all of them. And he started talking about them. So then it was a three-way conversation.
Yeah.
And she was like, you're fucking multiplying.
Yeah, but didn't you and Michael get a bit annoyed? See, I'm referring to him as if I know Michael now. Didn't you and Michael get a bit annoyed? Like, okay, who are you? You are new.
We shared a look.
This is a two-way conversation between two very good friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
We shared a look of like...
Who's this guy?
Why is he joining into the conversation?
Are you on
this
commission?
Is our conversation.
Yeah.
We'll invite you.
Yeah.
You don't just intervene.
Yeah.
I think the funniest moment for me was I went over to the till.
Yeah.
And there was a queue. And I'm queuing up. And then a voice behind me is like, oh, what did he say? It was something like, I think you got a good one there.
Were they talking about Mike, your relationship with Michael?
Yeah. And his wife went, for fuck's sake, like her face, because he just wouldn't stop. And she said to me, she went, I haven't seen him this happy in years.
Oh.
Wait until his daughter hears about this. She won't believe it. And then they took a photo.
That was the bit that I was going to say to you.
Mm.
You actually took a photo with this man.
She asked, she said, I haven't seen him smile in years. Would you mind if you two have a photo? So I don't know if he said he wanted a photo, but he didn't want to ask me.
It's on the mantelpiece in their home right now.
Oh, it'll be on social media. I haven't seen it yet.
No, the mantelpiece is better because that's more personal.
Yeah.
That's more, it really meant something to Michael. Yeah. Again, Michael, or I'm sorry, I don't know your name. I don't think Neil got your name.
Hmm.
Michael's wife, if you're listening, please, please reach out.
So there's a photo of me and Michael, and I think he had three rubs and I had like five. I was...
Right. You were hoarding them.
Oh, yeah.
Poor old Michael didn't get a look in.
No. Well, no, there was shitloads.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be definitely going back.
What if you go back and Michael happens to be there at the same time again?
Then it'll be like, no, it's fucking not. Then it's like, you've been coming every day.
In hopes of rekindling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I made a new friend.
Because I didn't go
old
with
Mikey
you.
Mikey boy.
You were like, oh, do you want to come with me? And I was like, no, I'm going to stay back. I can't remember if I had some work to do or what it was.
Yeah, you were working on an episode.
Working on. Anyway, Neil came back in the door and I was like, oh, you know, did you get your robes? And he was like, well, got more than fucking robes. That doesn't sound right.
Mm.
But, you know, you're like, I made a new friend.
Like when I say this garden centre is closer, what, 3 minute fucking journey?
Yeah, it's not far, yeah.
And how long was I gone?
Oh, long enough. Yeah, I thought you got lost. But apparently you just got lost in Michael's eyes.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah. That was nice. I love when that kind of thing happens where, you know, you're just going to do some fucking mundane task and you end up having like a really good conversation with someone. Now, I wouldn't have predicted it would be about, again, rubbing your meats together, but it's not for me to judge. You do you.
That's what he said to me at the till. So there was one I was unsure about, and that's part of the conversation we had over by the rub table.
The cherry one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I ended up buying a cherry cola barbecue rub. Now, it is nice. There's not a lot of cherry to it, though. But we're not talking about rubs. We're talking about... No. Yeah, that is what he said. He went, yeah, that one, it's got me intrigued. I might go back for that one. I'll get that next time. And she was like, will you just stop talking about rubs?
I can understand where she's coming from now, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, they went for plants.
Yes.
They didn't have any plants. I don't know what she had, but there were no plants.
Michael blew the budget on robes.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, Michael.
Yeah. Right, so we have a shout out.
We do indeed.
So this week we have Bliss Bailey.
Oh, Blissy.
Well, it's funny they should say old, because mine's Old Bailey.
The Old Bailey.
Old Bailey.
We've mentioned it a few times.
Yeah, a few people have been nicked.
Just a couple.
In there, yeah.
Well, you know what? Old Bailey, yeah?
Hmm.
What about the old Bill? Bill Bailey.
That's a person, isn't it?
Yeah,
a
comedian.
Yeah.
Bill Bailey. Got another one for you.
You're just pointing at a name on the board.
I am. It's to my right. I'm pointing and going, Bill Bailey. As if there's like a portrait of the man right there. Got another one for you.
Mm.
So, Bliss, Blissy, De-Evolution, Chansey.
Is that the Pokemon?
Yeah.
Fat Pinko.
I was going to leave that, so if people got it, they got it. If they didn't, they didn't. They break. Well, how the fuck did you get to Chansey from Bliss Bailey?
The Fat Pink Yolk?
Yeah.
Oh. It's annoying.
Why is it? I love Chansey.
Because it goes around going, Chansey. A
lot of health on that fucker.
Oh, yeah.
Sturdy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sturdy. If you ever play Pokemon Go, that was the one you'd fuck into a gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always put... how many did I have? And I put them in.
Oh, there's fucking loads. So, yeah, Bliss is a sturdy bugger.
I like Old Bailey.
I like Bill Bailey, but you don't see me fucking complaining.
No, but Old Bailey's reference to true crime. And it's mine.
And it's yours.
Yeah.
Yes.
So can we use that one? Or...
Well, I mean, it's really up to Bliss what they want to use.
Old Bailey.
They can go with Bill Bailey, Buffalo Bill for all I fucking care. You know, it's your name. You identify how you fucking choose.
Right, just while...
I just love Chansey. I love that name.
Yeah, right? Well, she might be a Chancer.
Chancer, yes.
So Chansey might be a cute way of saying...
A blissful Chancer.
Yeah, so Chansey might be a cute way of saying you fucking Chancer.
Hmm.
While we're on the subject of... You know, the Patreon nicknames. I've noticed a pattern on our Patreon. And you were the one who actually pointed out the bigger thing of it. So I was like, people are changing the usernames to their shout out name. Which I just, you know, that's what I could see. So that's what I said. And you went, yeah, but if they're subscribed to someone else's Patreon, they're there as the name we've given them.
Yeah, unless you can change it for different... subscriptions, but yeah. I don't actually know. I'd love that.
Yeah.
If they're just like full on identifying.
Yeah.
As their mortal name. You know what I mean? They're given mortal name.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was nice.
They've got a lovely community.
Yeah.
Haven't we? They're all a great bunch of lads.
So are we landing on Chansey?
Oh, again, like I said, to you,
she's
it's
a
really,
fucking Chancer.
Well, I mean, highly likely.
Yeah.
In our group of people. Whatever she prefers. Okay. You know, go with your instincts.
Yeah.
I mean, I quite like just Bill. You know, strong. Does what it says in the tin. But Chansey, I just love the name. I don't think it's that deep, Neil. You know? Throw a few out there, see what sticks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, if she's old, she might want Old Bailey.
Well, she might not want it for that reason.
Yeah.
You got to give the options.
Yeah, you don't want to point out someone's old.
Anyway, what we're kind of getting at is, thank you, Bliss Bailey. We appreciate you. And lads, don't forget, if you want your episodes early and ad-free, bit of bonus content here and there, head on over to Patreon and join old Chansey or Bill.
Or Old Bailey.
Or Old Bailey. Or, if you're not wanting to make the commitment to Patreon, totally get it. But please consider leaving us a rating and review if you would like to support the podcast. We appreciate you.
Yeah, get us up on that fucking algorithm.
Can you northern that up a bit when you say it? Can you like really kind of lay it on thick?
I thought that what?
I mean, you always kind of, that's just you, isn't it?
Hang on.
Get her up on that. I can't do it. Come on, like proper one of them.
Get us up on that fucking algorithm.
Very good. No, I like that. That was intimidating enough. That sent the message. Very good.
Hey gang, sorry to interrupt your episode of the Mortal Musings podcast. Nicola here from the Tis Yourself podcast. Like you, I love listening to the Mortal Musings podcast and listening to Neil's variation of the story while Megan tries to keep things on track. My podcast is slightly different. There's no true crime in there. But if you are in need of a break after a particularly heavy episode, I chat to famous people from around the world. People like Joel McKinnon-Miller, who played Scully in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Tate Donovan, who was Joshua in Friends, and Shona McGarty, who was Whitney Dean in EastEnders. They are just some of the guests I've had over the 7 seasons so far, and I would love you to come along and check out and see, is there an episode that you would like to listen to? Maybe you love listening to Megan's beautiful Irish accent and you're thinking, I'd love to listen to another Irish lady telling some stories. Then if that's the case, Tis Yourself is for you. So come on over, check us out. All, of course, after you finish listening to Mortal Musings.
So, what have you got for us today?
Today we're going to be talking about the murder of Annie Lay.
Okay.
Are you not familiar with the name?
No.
Just because there is a Forensic Files episode on this case. So as we go into it, might trigger a memory here or there.
Probably not.
No, probably not.
There's a lot of Forensic Files episodes.
There is. This is in the Forensic Files 2. You know, the more recent one.
Boston.
No, the more recent one.
You said it's not the Forensic Files 2.
No, I said this is in the Forensic Files 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Annie Lay was born on the 3rd of July 1985 in San Jose, California. She was born to a Vietnamese-American family and was raised in Placerville. Academically, Annie excelled. She was valedictorian of her high school and earned herself a $160,000 scholarship to study bioscience at the University of Rochester. It was here where she met a young man named Jonathan Wadowski.
What's it mean when they say, like, valedictorian?
Valedictorian?
Yeah.
I believe it's basically just like you're the top of your class. You're like the honourable one.
Okay. No, it's just because I've heard that, like, before.
Yeah, we don't really have anything like that.
No, we just get, like, smiley face stickers and...
You might get, like a kind of a student of the year, but it doesn't really mean much. I think Americans tend to put a lot more emphasis on things like this than we do. Now, like I said, while at Rochester, she met a young man named Jonathan Wadowski. The pair entered into a relationship, later becoming engaged, with Annie describing Jonathan as her best friend. Now, sidebar, I think that's lovely. You know when someone considers their partner to be their best friend?
Us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it always kind of makes me sad when someone views their friendships and romantic relationships as two completely foreign concepts.
Mm.
I think if anything, we're probably a bit too codependent. We're like, do you know when you see cats walking side by side, like right up against each other?
Yeah.
But that's only because Neil is always fucking walking into me.
What do you mean?
You can't walk in a straight line.
I fucking can.
No, you can't.
It's you bashes into me.
No accountability. Anyway, in 2007, Annie graduated from the University of Rochester and was accepted into Yale's Pharmacology PhD program. As a student in this program, Annie studied metabolic diseases, and her work involved enzyme research experiments that looked into the possible implications for the treatment of cancer, diabetes, and muscular dystrophy.
Yale's supposed to be a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Ivy League.
What?
It's up there.
Right.
It's the name, you know what I mean?
Is it as good as Oxford?
I would imagine they're a similar type of thing.
What about Sheffield Uni?
No, not so much. Letting the side down there, aren't you?
Yeah.
She was described as a brilliant graduate student, but regardless of how busy she may have been, would always make time for others. Quote, "The type of rare person you will meet who is naturally good." Her laughter was infectious and her goodness was ingenuous.
Who speaks like that? Her goodness was...
Well, that was a statement by Yale. So you know what they're like.
Right, okay.
Trying to talk all proper and that.
Yeah.
Yeah. By this stage of her life, it seems that Annie was fairly settled. She was now 24 years old. She wasn't big into going out partying. She dedicated much of her time to the research she was doing, planning her wedding with Jonathan, and was all set to receive her doctorate in pharmacology in 2013.
Sorry, you know, just going back to the talking proper and that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You always take the piss out of me for how I say things. But there was a time when I tried talking properly, and not only you, but our listeners tore me to shreds.
When was this?
I was like lost trying to find the spa in a hotel, and I said one.
Spa?
Yeah, and I said one has an appointment, and everyone took the piss.
Didn't you just say spa?
Spa.
So I'm hearing spar.
Yeah.
Spa. There's no R.
It's a spa.
No, I think it's just your accent. I'm hearing spar like the shop.
Yeah.
No, spa. S-P-A. Not S-P-A-R like.
Yeah, I know how you spell it.
Why are you saying it? Sorry, go on. You were looking for the spa, yeah.
Yeah, and I said, one has an appointment.
Yeah.
And you all took the piss.
Yeah. And one is not late. It was their labyrinth of a lobby.
It fucking was.
Yeah.
Crystal bloody maze out there. But yeah, no, but... So, I just wanted to point out, you know, because
You choose not to try and improve yourself.
Wow. No, what I was saying is I knew you were having a dig at me. When you went talking proper and that.
No, it wasn't.
Oh.
The paranoia is real.
Okay, you can continue.
Do you think I speak proper?
I think you try.
No, like obviously when I'm telling the case, I make a bit of an effort. But I mean in my day-to-day language, do you think for a second I speak proper?
Oh no, absolutely not.
I'm a mess.
Well, didn't want to say anything.
Tuesday, the 8th of September 2009, was set to be a fairly standard day for Annie. She took the Yale Transit bus from her apartment to her office at the Sterling Hall of Medicine. From there, she headed to the Amstead building, where she used her keycard to enter lab G13 just past 10 a.m. This was Annie's last known location. By 9 p.m. that night, not only had Annie not arrived home, but she hadn't even called to say that she would be late or out for the night. For Annie not to let her roommate know that she wouldn't be home on time or to change her routine at all would have been particularly out of the ordinary for her, and so her roommate decided to call the police.
Yeah, but she's at uni.
Yeah.
They're a bit woo-woo, aren't they?
But Annie wasn't.
She's had a rum or something. Yeah, it could. Change.
Yeah. But again, Annie wasn't big into going out partying. So even if she was to message her roommate and go, here, look, I'm actually going to stop at the pub. I'm going to have a few drinks.
Yeah.
That would even be unusual for her.
Well, she'd say a bar. It'd be unusual for her to say a pub.
Yeah. No, as I was saying, like, this doesn't sound right for the setting here.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? And that's also, you know, not to mention Annie and her roommate would usually be in contact throughout the day. And for there to have been radio silence, it was further cause for concern.
Mm.
Given that this was such a stray from Annie's usual behaviour or schedule, police did begin to look into the case immediately. With her upcoming wedding, police wondered if Annie had simply gotten cold feet and had decided to leave of her own accord. But everyone in her life said that she was beyond excited and that any time she was required to sign anything, she'd even began to sign using her married name.
That's fraud.
Well, I'm guessing she wasn't signing, like, maybe official documents, but if she's signing for a parcel or something, maybe.
That's fraud.
That's not, like, you know.
It's, you can't even open someone else's mail.
I could write flim flam flibbity bob on my parcel and the delivery guys can be like, yep, fabulous.
But that's fabrication. You can't do that. That's delusional.
It's delusional.
Yeah, because you don't know if he's going to fuck off at the altar. And you're already signing his fucking name.
Yeah.
That's delusional.
I think delusional might be slightly strong. Maybe it's, maybe you could say presumptuous.
Or
premature.
Yeah.
But delusional might be a touch too strong here.
I think that's bonkers.
Do you?
Yeah.
Downgraded to bonkers.
No, seriously. Right. Yeah. Say if we were up to get wed.
Up to get, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're not married yet.
Yeah.
And then I came home from work and you went, oh, get this. Just for a bit of practice, post came today and it needed signing for. So I signed it, Mrs. Johnston. I'd be like, you did, why? You're not Mrs. Johnston.
What, you think I'm like single white female in you?
I'd be like, is there a ring on this fucking finger? Yeah. Yeah. You don't like it when the fella says that, do you?
Doesn't bother me.
Holding up the wrong hand.
You're like shaking your hand with rage.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. And then I looked and I was like, wait, lefty loose. That's me right.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you don't like it when the fella says that. Put a ring on it.
You don't like the rings on the wrong hand either, do you?
Yeah.
So you're not cool with the changing of names. That's not okay with you. That's where you're taking a stance in this episode. It happens nearly every episode that you take a stance on the wrong issue. And that's the one. That's the hill you're going to die on today.
She's going by a false identity.
Okay. So you're thinking that could have something to do with her disappearance?
Well, yeah. Postman could have got in trouble.
Yeah.
He could have took parcel back. He could have gone back and they'd be like, who the fuck signed for that?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Mrs. Smith. That shouldn't have been Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
That should have been Miss or Ms. Lay.
Yeah.
You're sacked. And he's like, right, she's fucking getting it.
Yeah.
And then you can continue with the case now.
I really didn't think the episode was going to stray there, you know? It's a testament to you, really.
It is testing me.
Yeah. Anyway, Annie's married name and Neil's outrage aside.
Well, she ain't got a married name. She's not married.
Okay, Annie's potential married name and Neil's outrage aside.
Yeah.
They next decide to check her credit cards, but there was no charges and there was no phone activity either. When they checked her office, they found that Annie had left her handbag there along with her phone and wallet. The only thing she had taken with her to the lab from her personal belongings was her identification card. Next, investigators begin to go through the CCTV footage from within the building and the external campus where Annie was last known to have been. There were 75 cameras covering all entrances and exits and surrounding areas, which produced hundreds of hours of footage for the police to sift through. About 700 hours, to be more specific.
I think I'd be good at that.
What, going through footage?
Yeah. Why is that funny?
What do you mean, like looking out for small details in it?
Yeah. Like, right. You know, like say if you saw her go into a room.
Yeah.
And then a man went in.
Yeah.
And then the man leaves the room, but he's got like a laundry trolley. So for me, Penny would drop immediately. I'd be like, he didn't go in with that.
Yeah.
And now he's left with it. Yeah. She's in there. Case closed.
What would you... What would you do if you saw him enter the room with the laundry basket and exit with it? Would he be cleared?
But
or
she
would
never,
it be, that's premeditation?
But she never left the room.
Yeah. No, she's
still in that
She's
toy.
Already in there.
Yeah.
And then you've seen him enter with the laundry basket and exit with it. Is he cleared or is it premeditation? Or is that a whole other kettle of fish?
Well, I don't know. That's not the scenario I had in my head.
Well, okay. You're going to need another, you know, at least to the end of the episode to figure that one out.
I'm just saying, Penny would have dropped immediately.
Yeah.
I'd be good at seeing that, at picking up on that.
Yeah, because you've got eyes, yeah.
What do you mean?
Because your eyes are viewing that footage, those images, and you've seen him do that. So you've realised that he did in fact do that.
He didn't do what?
He did, in fact, go into the room.
Yeah.
With a laundry basket.
No, he didn't.
He didn't, no. What are you saying?
No, that's what I said.
Oh, sorry, he came out with it.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes.
And I was like, he didn't have that before.
Yes.
And she never left that room.
Right.
So she's in that trolley.
Right.
Penny would drop immediately.
Yes.
I would pick up on that.
Yeah.
So that's why I think I would be good.
Yeah. As a detective.
At that job.
Yeah.
Not a detective. No,
just
I'd
security.
Be shy at a detective.
Oh, okay.
But watching the footage.
Yeah.
I'd be good at that.
So if they're ever looking for someone specifically just to sift through footage.
Yeah.
You're kind of throwing that out there now.
Scotland Yard, I'm available. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, while watching the footage, they can see Annie enter the building and that she's wearing a brown skirt, green top and a brown necklace that day. But that's it. She never exits the building. At about 12:40 p.m. that day, a fire alarm goes off in the building. It was a false alarm, but enough for everyone to clear out.
Hang on, they said they were looking at the CCTV in the building.
Yeah, the entrance exits and the external campus.
So it's not in the building then?
Did I say within the building?
Yeah.
Sorry, so there would have been some footage, but Annie's not seen. Okay, so there are some cameras inside, but it was much more entrance, exits, and the actual campus.
Okay. I could be wrong, but I'm certain you said in the building.
Oh, I apologise. Now, like I said, there is some footage that you can see within the building, but I'm guessing there's not a lot. Or, like I said, Annie was never seen on any of them. Okay?
Right. Okay.
Now, again, with this footage, after the alarm and people filtering out of the building, Annie is nowhere to be seen. She had seemingly just vanished. Police interviewed over 150 people, and they also questioned her fiancé, Jonathan, who was a student in New York about 90 minutes from Yale. Jonathan was cleared after he provided a solid alibi. Then on the 13th of September, 5 days after the disappearance, what should have been her wedding day, Annie's body was found.
That's rough.
Absolutely horrific.
Fucking hell. Do you know what to do with alibis?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when they're ruled out immediately because they had a solid alibi.
Yeah.
What's a solid alibi? If I killed someone and then I said to you, right, the police might get wind up, but it's me. So if they come, just say I was here. And you just go, yeah, he was here. That's a solid alibi.
Well, I would say a more solid alibi is people, there's multiple witnesses to place him, you know, at the university's place, and he's an hour and a half away.
And
there's
on
no
CCTV
way.
And
yeah, or okay. He's got a receipt for X, Y, and Z at this time, you know.
Okay.
Now, there was a reason Annie had not been seen exiting the building. In the basement of the laboratory building, there was a pungent odour emitting, but it was not immediately obvious where exactly it was coming from. After police were directed towards the area, they knew immediately that the smell was decomposition. They begin to search the area, and behind a metal wall panel about 13 inches wide, among the cables and other utilities, was Annie. Her body had been placed inside the deep recess of the wall upside down. She'd been sexually assaulted and her collarbone and jaw broken.
Easiest bone to break in your body. It's collarbone.
What do you think that may have been in the process of moving her body? You don't think it was necessarily during the attack?
If they're stuffed her behind a metal wall.
Yeah.
The collarbone.
Could have been broken through that. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems an odd bone to break in a sexual assault. Jaw? Yeah, they've just twatted her.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah, it's just your language sometimes.
But collarbone, yeah, I'd say that's more disposing the body.
Yeah.
Has done that.
Her underwear is described as having been disarranged. She was still wearing the surgical gloves that she would have been wearing while working. Her cause of death was determined to have been traumatic asphyxiation caused by neck compression.
Could this be a janitor?
Do you think?
Well, basement.
Now, Annie was very petite. She was under 5 foot tall and weighed less than 100 pounds. So, in terms of concealing her body, it would have been relatively easy compared to, you know, a sturdy bastard like myself.
You're saying it like it's a negative thing. It really, really isn't.
No, initially it pissed me off a bit, but now I'm just like, you know, whatever, good, strong Irish stock.
Yeah.
The only reason it bothered me initially is because I'm not in shape. It's not like I'm like strong, sturdy woman. It's not like a compliment the way you're saying it. You're just like, look at you, you fucking tree trunk.
No, but it is that. You don't work out, but you still have that.
What?
Like,
I have upper body strength of a kitten, Neil.
I'm not talking about upper, like your thighs. I always say it's your legs.
Good hiking legs, yeah.
Yeah. That's why you're sturdy.
I'm not getting blown over.
Definitely isn't because of your fucking biceps and triceps.
No, they're abysmal.
But yeah, your sturdy legs. That's why you'd be hard to knock over.
Yeah. You'd be hard to knock over.
Yeah.
Will you write that on your next like Valentine's card to me?
You're an odd one to knock over.
We should start our own line of cards. What do you reckon?
Ooh.
You'd be a hard one to knock over.
Knock over.
Knock over. So, like I said, Annie was particularly petite. So, in terms of concealing her body, it made it slightly more of an easy task. But that doesn't change the fact that the location where Annie's body was found, this was a high security limited area that only certain people had access to. And so police began to hone in on those who did. Quote, I think that it suggests it was someone who could get into that space. It certainly will be extremely difficult for someone from outside of Yale to get into that space. Not impossible, but extremely difficult.
It's going to be a professor who's got a thing for one of his students.
Mm.
Or a janitor.
Mm.
They're my two options so far. I'm only saying janitor because it's basement.
Yeah.
But I'm more inclined to think pervy professor.
When I say basement, I believe it was the bathroom in the basement. Don't think like
workshop.
It wasn't like kind of this storage room, kind of half discarded room. It was
a shit house.
It was the bathroom on the basement level.
Right. Professor. I'm going with Professor. They're horrible bastards, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah. You see them on shows all the time, trying to look up student skirts and that.
What shows are you watching? Do you know what this is? You recently watched one episode of Teachers. Anyone remember that show? That's a few years ago now, that show.
Never seen it. We watched one episode and didn't watch it again. It was crap. I couldn't follow it.
You couldn't follow it?
No. It kept like going into like he were fucking talking to himself or fucking hallucinating or something. I couldn't follow it.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, it was Andrew Lincoln before he became...
Cool!
Yeah. Before he became Rick of The Walking Dead. Now, once Annie's body was found, DNA tests were conducted on her clothing, the area where her body had been left, and the multiple items which were found behind the wall panel. DNA was found belonging to two men. They entered the results into CODIS, as they believed with an attack this violent, it was likely that he had acted before. From the national database, they did receive a match to a man who had been convicted of drug charges in 2001. Now, the reason his DNA was there was because he had actually worked on the building, so he did have access to this area, but he'd actually been killed before Annie had even gone missing.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, the other sample returned no matches from the database. So, what are they to do next?
Go around all professors. Get DNA from everyone in Yale.
No, the key cards. This was a secure building. You needed a key card to get access to a lot of these areas.
So they could have used theirs.
Well, they could have, but they would want to check that as well.
Yeah.
So they're going to check the key cards.
Okay. You okay?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're laughing at.
Because they would have had to have used, whether it was theirs or someone else's key card, to get to Annie in the room she was in. So even if they used hers after the fact, they would have needed access.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Okay. I thought you meant into the toilet. So they've already got hold of her.
Yeah.
So they could just get her key card and use it.
They could from that point on.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
Yeah, no. So they checked the logs and find that there was just one person who kept going into the lab where Annie had been working. And this was 24-year-old Raymond J. Clark, the third, no less.
Was it so at 24, so you were a student?
No, Raymond was not a student, he was an employee. And because of this, he had access to many areas. And like Annie, he was also engaged to be married.
And what was his job?
So Ray was he was a lab tech, which basically was kind of like what you were saying. It was sort of like a custodian type position. He would, part of his role was like taking care of the animals they kept there.
So it was
and
a bit...
cleaning up after them.
Okay. So I was close with janitor then.
Yeah, you were fairly on the money.
Right.
Now, Ray had worked at Yale since December of 2004, and his employment history showed nothing that, quote, gave indication that his involvement in such a crime might be possible. Although Ray's co-workers described him as a control freak and that he viewed the lab and their mice as his territory.
What was he doing with mice?
Well, no, he had to care for them and clean up after them, okay, kind of thing.
Yeah, but we're all like that in our workplace to some extent, aren't we? You know, it might be, say if it's cleaning up, say if it's mopping, you know, I'm better at mopping, so that's my thing. I do that.
Right.
Why are you laughing? That's a normal fucking thing.
To a degree. When I clock out and I'm out that door, I don't give a fuck what you do. You know what I mean? As long as I'm not walking back into an absolute shit show, that's out of my mind. You just can fuck off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't, like, if we were on shift with someone else and they did a job I would usually do, even if I noticed they're doing a shit job, like, what they're doing tonight is fucking...
Oh, no, that'd infuriate me.
Would it?
Yeah. Not to this extent, obviously.
What extent?
Murder.
When police dug a bit further into Ray's background, they discovered that an ex-girlfriend of his had reported him for domestic violence. No good, Raymond.
So, they should have seen it coming then.
What do you mean, Yale?
Well, like, because when you're a victim of domestic violence, oh no, because a lot of them, they will go quiet about it. See, if I were a victim of domestic violence, I'd shout from the fucking rooftops.
Would you?
Like if I ever, say if I still lived in the local area and I saw you with another man on a date, I'd be like, look at these photos. She did that. She did that to me. She split my fucking lip. I would not let you breathe easy. Figuratively.
Okay, for... okay, for the record, I've never put my hands on you. Okay, I've never... you're saying...
Oh, you have once.
You're saying... Is it... Okay, when?
And it was, you know, in the last episode when I said you know, if I did a prank on you, you'd do something like smash my laptop up.
Yeah.
I poked your ass and you turned around and slapped me.
Slapped your arm?
Yeah.
Slapped your arm?
Very hard.
After you had touched me?
Yeah, but I just poked.
Okay. I'll give the actual situation what happened there. Right? Because you're leaving a few details out, my fucking
friend. You said
friend.
It was dangerous.
It was. Do you know? Right, fuck you. Fuck you. First of all, can I just go back to what you previously said? You're acting like you have photos of the damage I've done to your body. Like there's actually these photos that exist.
No, no, no. That is if I was
a
victim of domestic violence.
I know, but the way you word it is if like you have them there ready for when I end up with someone else.
Well, I can show them the scar on my arm.
Yeah, here we go. Anyway, the situation you're talking about, what actually happened was I was at the stove putting more wood on the fire, leaned over, like my head near enough in it, Neil poked my arse as I'm I don't mean like a little poke, I mean like pushed me. And I was like, do you have any hair fucking dangerous? And I slapped his arm.
Yeah.
My reaction was like a mother, you know, when they get like upset with their toddler for, you know, about to run across the street.
Yeah.
And it's not right, but they slap their hand. That's what I did to Neil. Neil acted as if I took a fucking brick and ran at him.
I said that were a bit extreme.
Yeah. Compared to like me nearly getting my face fucking melted off. You still think you're the victim in that situation. And it's wild. But to go back to Ray and his situation, not to make it about us. You know, it said that she'd reported it. So maybe she'd reported it, but never went further to file charges or anything like that.
Right, okay.
On closer inspection of Ray's key card activity, they saw that he entered the room while Annie was working and stayed there for approximately 45 minutes.
That's long enough.
Well, the thing is, this wouldn't have necessarily been a big deal, but given the situation, he would have been the last person to see her alive.
Hmm.
Digging further into his activity on the day that Annie was murdered, they see that he was going back and forth between the lab that Annie was in, room G13, to room G22, which was a storage room just down the hall. So police check the storage room and they find a brown bead underneath a unit. Do you remember me saying that on the day of her disappearance, Annie was wearing a brown necklace?
Right.
You fucked it, Ray Ray.
Yeah. So one bead fell off the necklace?
One bead that he clearly hadn't cleaned up.
Right, okay.
Now, Ray had been in and out of this room 11 times, whereas Annie's key card showed no activity. So, like you were saying, they could have used hers.
Mm.
No. He could have even attempted to do that to try and make it look as if I had been with her that day.
Yeah.
We were both X, Y, and Z.
Shagging.
Well, I meant both getting stock or what have you.
Oh.
Yeah. Hidden in the ceiling tiles of this room, they find a bloodied sock and glove, which DNA was matched to Ray and the blood to Annie. In the laundry, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
In the laundry.
Yeah.
You all in the laundry basket being a possible thing that you would spot.
Mode of transport.
Well, in the laundry. Mode of
transport. That's what it is.
Well, in the laundry, police found a pair of scrubs which had been stained with blood. Again, the blood was matched to Annie and semen found on them was matched to Ray.
So you knocked one out with gloves on?
What?
So he knocked one out with gloves on? Or he was using the glove?
Well, Annie was sexually assaulted, so depending on what happened exactly.
Right.
We don't have full details of what actually happened.
Right.
Now, among the items found with Annie's body was a green pen. They were able to connect this to Ray as he always signed into the lab logbooks using this distinctive ink.
Right. That triggers me.
Well, hang on, right, just before you go off. The day that Annie went missing, Ray, for some reason, can't think of why, he switched to black ink. He made no attempt here, really, did he?
No. Right, so that with a green pen, that angers me. If you are a grown adult and you sign your name in any other coloured ink than black, fuck off.
I was about to take the piss and say, yeah, because that offends you, the green ink thing. It actually does.
Green, red, blue, any of it.
I don't know. I don't know why I didn't pick up on that, because only a couple of weeks ago you went on a rant about this.
You ask any professional writer, you do not sign anything unless it's black. If someone hands me a blue pen, I'm not signing.
Right.
You sign with black ink. Green? Grow up.
Right.
Like a twat at school with fucking gel pens.
So, the fire alarm on the day of the disappearance.
That was a distraction.
Well, when I heard this, I thought, well, that's fucking convenient.
Hmm.
The alarm was said to have been caused by the release of steam from one of the laboratory hoods, and the police did believe this could have been intentional. When they further examined footage from around the time of the fire alarm, they see Ray exit the building, go across the street, where he sits on a step and sort of bows his head into his hands and looks to be in some sort of distress.
Hmm.
So, if it was him, I wonder why, because he exited the building as well. I'm not sure what his intention was. It doesn't seem like he was going to buy himself much time to do something, unless it was just to give him time to think about what to do next.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, but it still seems like a risky game when attempting to conceal a crime in a building full of people. So you're getting them all to filter out of where they were, and now they're all going to come back in. So what if one of them went, oh, I need to go to the storage room to get something, or, you know what I mean?
Or
you disturbed them from what they were doing.
Or if they took it seriously, like when I was at the hotel that time and the fire brigade came.
Yeah.
They would search every room before they'd let anyone in.
Mm. No, that's kind of my point. It's a very risky game to be playing.
Yeah, bloody stupid.
Yeah. I mean, talk about Ray right here. He's
fucking Yale in that.
Not the sharpest knife in the block.
Mm.
In Lab G13, there is blood found on a box of gloves. While talking with officers in this lab, it was said that Ray had attempted to kind of nonchalantly move the box of gloves to conceal the blood. Now, the reason he was able to even do this was because the lab had not immediately been closed off as a crime scene. And this was for multiple reasons. At that point, they had no reason to believe that Annie had been killed within this area. So, it's not a murder investigation at that point, it's where has she gone?
Yeah.
And the other reason was because that area was also used for multi-million dollar research purposes. So they're not going to be so quick to close it.
Right.
Now, when police spoke with Ray, he was said to have been very cooperative with them, to his own detriment. When Ray was taken to the station and searched, his body displayed bruising and cuts consistent with a violent physical altercation. But Ray hit him with a classic justification for the scratches on his body.
Fell in a bush.
No, he said that his kitty cat did it.
Well, that's understandable. But at least you're hearing Annie fought.
Yeah. But the thing is, I mean, they're, like, you look at me after I've been near tie. I'm cut up to fuck. But I guarantee it looks different. You know?
Yeah. No, definitely. Like,
a nail scratch is very different to like the slit from a cat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, Ray wasn't a particularly big guy. He was about average. But given how petite Annie was, there was quite a disparity. Ray was a foot taller than Annie and twice her weight. Annie was 4'11" and 90 pounds. Ray was 5'9" and 190 pounds.
Yeah, he could easily.
So, That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
In his backpack, they found a fishing line and lure, which they believed he had in his possession in an attempt to retrieve the items which he had dropped in the wall cavity while concealing Annie's body.
Well, that's an image, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
Fishing over a wall? Like,
well, they're what? Well, into a wall.
What, is it through an hole?
Yeah, so in the wall, so it's a metal door, and you open it, and it's got all, you know, the wires, pipes, it's just a utility.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he would have had to have put it into the actual hole in the wall.
Right.
It's not over a wall, Neil.
Yeah, but if he can't see what he's doing, then how's he going to use a fishing?
I don't, that was just their theory. It sounds slightly odd to me. But say he didn't want to touch her body again or anything in. I don't know. This is just what they thought, Neil.
Yeah, okay.
Don't shoot the messenger. So not only was his DNA found on Annie, his movements were extremely suspicious, but he also failed a polygraph test and had attempted to fabricate alibis. So now the polygraph test, you know, it is whatever. But when you add it in with everything else, it's another bit they're kind of like, oh.
But, you know, with all the evidence, I think that's just a waste of resources to do the polygraph test. You had to get a polygraph tester in.
I think they just need to be fucking outlawed, really, at this stage. Because the problem...
That's not here or there.
Well, it is.
Even if it's like a proven method, you don't need it here. Why did you get that in? You've got enough.
To tell if he's being deceptive or not.
Well, you just said, did you kill her? No. Right, he's been deceptive.
But that's your opinion of whether he's being deceptive. They're trying to actually measure his responses. Do you get what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not a fan of polygraph tests. I mean, we know it's very flawed.
Mm.
But in terms of this, like I said, once you're like 99.9% sure you've got evidence against them, I think it could be something used to further just say, when we did happen to do this test, deception was shown.
Yeah.
But I don't think it should be in any way working, you know, part of the working out of a case.
Mm.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Would you say that's fair?
Yeah.
Because I know you're on the same page as me. You're kind of, you know, it's the
only, shit. Yeah. The lie detector test should only be on the Jerry Kyle show. Fucking legendary.
What about Jerry?
It was too fake.
Maury?
Never watched it.
Oh my God.
Never seen it.
Wow.
Trisha, I watched that.
I didn't really watch Trisha. Wasn't into Jeremy Kyle. I liked Maury.
Jeremy Kyle.
Obviously Jerry as well. Back in the day.
Mm.
Now, after obtaining a warrant, Ray was arrested at 10 past 8 on the morning of the 17th of September at a Super 8 motel, which police had been monitoring throughout the night. Ray had stayed at the motel following his release from the police station the previous day after he had given a DNA sample and allowed the police to search his car and home. That is actually the reason why he did give his DNA, because he could have been held should he have chosen not to comply.
Right.
Once apprehended, Ray was held on a $3 million bond and placed in solitary confinement for his protection due to the case being so highly publicised. Now, something that really annoyed me about this case, it kept being referred to as a case of, quote, workplace violence. Which, yeah, technically it was, but workplace violence puts me in mind of, you know, slapping the shit out of a dumbass manager. Or like, you know, remember Paul Dennis Reed throwing a plate at his co-worker.
Mm.
Not sexually assaulting and murdering someone and thinking you can conceal the crime due to you perpetrating these acts within limited access areas. I think it's, I think the terminology just seems a bit light to me. So without Ray willing to speak on his crimes, we do not know what exactly his motive was. The prosecution believed that his motive was sexual assault and that the murder was to cover up his crime. Sounds about right to me.
Yeah. Oh, his poor fiance. I just remembered you said, but he was engaged as well.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
It's no good all round.
It'd be a good ending if both partners, you know, at the trials and stuff, fell in love. And then they got engaged and got married.
Would it?
Would it not?
It seems a bit too close to home, you know what I mean? You'd look at them and it would remind you.
Well, it'd piss your man off, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, yeah. I feel like you're, like, starting to write a rom-com or something. Slightly twisted one, maybe, but...
Well, it wouldn't be a comedy, would it?
Bit of a thriller rom-com.
A rom-thrill?
Yes.
We don't want comedy in it.
We'll workshop it, yeah.
Yeah, a rom-thrill.
Yeah. On the 17th of March, 2011, Ray Ray pleaded guilty to murder. For the charge of attempted sexual assault... Ray entered an Alford plea, which, if you're unfamiliar, it basically means that he does not admit to the crime, but understands that there is sufficient evidence against him.
Which is stupid.
Yeah, it is slightly frustrating, but it does guarantee his imprisonment and saves the family from a highly publicised trial.
Yeah, but then you, if he won't own up to it, like you said, like he's not going to speak on it. So you're never going to know what happened.
Yeah.
The family still needs closure.
I mean, look.
Why did you do that to my daughter?
Me personally, as much as I don't want to know, I have to know.
I would.
But some people, they don't want to. And I can completely understand that.
I don't know.
But to someone, to some people, it's kind of like, what's done is done. Do I necessarily need to know the details? Is it going to make anything better? Or am I just going to keep fixating on the fact that it happened?
It might come as a shock to you, but I'd definitely fixate on what happened. I need to know. But,
no, I know you would.
I'd be the father in court saying, do you want to know what happened to her? Put me in a room with him for 5 minutes and I'll get it for you.
During proceedings, Raymond's father, Raymond Jr., that would be Raymond II, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
He said, quote, I know that we will never understand, as I know Ray does not understand how this could have happened.
What a twat.
Oh, just wait for it. He said that he is proud of his son for taking responsibility, that his son had repeatedly expressed remorse, sobbed uncontrollably, and, quote, his heart is tortured by the reality that he caused the death. You're proud of him.
Fuck him in the nick and all.
Like, proud of him. Lads, can we just stop? Stop praising men for the absolute bare minimum. Actually, this is so far below the minimum. We're now praising murderers for expressing some form of pseudo-emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not fucking sorry. He's not fucking tortured. He's fucking raging that he was caught.
Yeah.
End of.
Yeah, yeah. And this with the fucking second and third, fuck off with that shit. Like,
you're a prick.
If someone joins our Patreon, right, I will tell you all now, if one of you who is a listener and you're fucking Richard II or whatever, if you join our Patreon, I guarantee your Patreon nickname will be Lump of Shite.
And I'll back you on that. This is the thing though, right? If his father had said something along the lines of, you know, he still loves his son, still wants to have a relationship with his son, that's a different story. But to say you're proud is, Ray, I gotta be honest, you need to have a fucking word with yourself. Yeah. Like, don't be such a fucking gobshite all your life.
Yeah. Like I said, fuck him, isn't Nick? It's outrageous.
Scandalous, even.
He should get lynched for that.
Maybe a bit too far.
What do you mean?
You think he should be fucking killed?
Lynched?
For saying it, yes.
I didn't say killed, I said lynched.
Okay, tell me what your definition of lynching is.
Well, it's a mob, isn't it? And they chase you with pitchforks and that. And O's.
And what?
O's.
Hoes.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what lynching is, isn't it?
No.
To chase you with fucking pitchforks.
No.
Lynch him, they'll shout.
Anyway, on the 3rd of June, Raymond, the third, was sentenced to a minimum of 44 years to be served. During sentencing, Ray was said to have expressed remorse for his crimes. He said, quote, there are no excuses for what I have done. Annie was and will always be a wonderful person. By far a better person than I will ever be in my life. I'm sorry I lied. I'm sorry I ruined lives. And I'm sorry for taking Annie Lay's life.
That's not good enough. He's going to be out at 68. I was doing the math.
Well done. No, because I'm not fast at maths.
44 years?
44.
Yeah, and he was 24?
26 by the time of the trial. It was nice. Delayed for 2 years.
All right, 70 is going to be. Could still kill it then, at that age.
Yeah. I think he should have got life, myself.
I think he should have got fucking gas chamber. Mustard gas and whatever they use.
Now, Annie's family also spoke at the hearing and said that what should have been a joyous time in their lives, filled with excitement for Annie's upcoming wedding, well, this turned into the sorrow of having to plan a funeral. Quote, I will never see her walking down the aisle. I will never hold my grandchildren. Her future is gone. Her life is gone. You took away her life. You took away her future. I will never hug Annie again. Raymond III is scheduled for release on the 16th of September, 2053. The majority of Annie's family were reported to have been content with the sentence given, but not one of her aunties, who had hoped for the death sentence or at least life imprisonment. She said, quote, I feel as though Annie's life has been and will further be denigrated and defiled if this court renders a decision which falls for anything less than the very life of the man who raped, brutalised and murdered her.
Do you know what you could do as like a parent, especially in America?
Mm.
I think this is what I'd do. So it's not on me. So you know I like...
What do you mean I think this is what I would do so it's not on me?
Yeah, hear me out.
Okay.
You'll get what I mean. So in America, it's all public domain, isn't it? Like, you know, people's rap sheets.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're prisoned and stuff like that. So I wait for him to go to prison so you know what prison he goes to. And then I would keep digging of prisoners who are doing life who are in that prison. Find a real hard bastard. Like right. A Raymond the Bastard sort.
Yeah.
Arrange a visitation. And then you say to them, I'll look after your wife or your kids or whatever. Like, I'll sort him out.
And make his life hell.
Yeah. Don't kill him.
You've got a whole plan, haven't you?
Don't fucking kill him, but put him on the brink of death every time.
Fucking hell.
Let him heal.
Yeah.
And then do it again. Let him heal. Do it again. That's what I would do. And I'd say every time you do it, a couple of grand will go to your missus. Sort of shopping out and that.
Right.
She could even get a Tesla.
Oh, God, who are
all
of them?
In America, they're all obsessed with fucking Tesla, aren't they?
A lot of people are getting rid of them now, aren't they? They do fucking right.
Don't you think that's a good plan?
I mean, I feel like I shouldn't, for legal reasons, say that's a good plan, okay. But I see what you're getting at. But, you know, it's unusual for a man of yourself. You wouldn't usually hold a grudge, would you?
No.
No. During Annie's funeral, there was nearly 600 people in attendance. Annie may have been widely known as a brilliant grad student, but there was much more to her than this. Her cousin said of her, quote, it was the silly girl that she was that made us all love her. Her silliness and friendliness and not her academic achievement that made the most impression on us. Her mother spoke of how her daughter's death was like a knife searing through her soul. With the pain she was feeling, she still made a point to address her other child, quote, John, even now Annie's gone, but I still have you and love you very much. You are my son. Which I think it's lovely that she chose to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it can happen at times where, you know, a child dies and like you can understand why it takes such a toll, but unfortunately you can kind of segregate the family members.
Yeah, you hear of it a lot.
Following Annie's death, Yale established a scholarship fund in her name. Jonathan's family also released a statement in which they expressed their grief for Annie's family. They thanked all those who had helped in the preparations for the wedding, as well as the effort put in by the police and Yale during the investigation. They said that Annie will live in their hearts forever, and suggested that if anyone wanted to make a donation in Annie's name, that she and Jonathan had actually chosen and listed the I Have a Dream Foundation on their registry. This foundation provides support for young people in low-income households socially, emotionally and academically. So, very fitting given how the couple met. We'll actually leave a link to the foundation in the bio in case any of you guys are interested. Back in February of 2009, just months prior to her murder, Annie wrote an article which was published in the Yale Medical School's B magazine. The subject of the article was crime and safety.
Fuck off.
Mm. In her high school yearbook, Annie stated her hopes for the future. Her long-term goal was to become a laboratory pathologist and the 12 years of higher education it would take to reach this goal. Quote, I just hope that all the hard work is going to pay off and I'm really going to enjoy my job. Ray has never spoke of why he attacked Annie. As for his father saying he took responsibility, well, he didn't really have much of a choice, did he? And if he was really to take responsibility, surely this means that he would tell what exactly happened and why he did this. But he never did.
No.
Because he's a prick.
Yeah. He's a turd.
Raymond the Turd, as you said.
Hmm.
Anyway, that is the murder of Annie Leigh. Neil, any thoughts?
I think I was quite vocal throughout.
I think you were.
I think he did it.
But, yes.
You
think what he did was wrong?
I haven't seen Annie, but if she's attractive, that's what killed her. That's
absolutely beautiful.
That's what it is then.
Absolutely beautiful girl.
Yeah. He saw her, knew he couldn't have her.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if he had some sort of like fixation.
Yeah.
Obsession.
You know, I always say this and then I proceed to comment anyway. Not very often, but from time to time I'll comment on people's appearance. This is. I don't, maybe yous won't understand what I mean. He's got a lip that just pisses me off. You can tell he's a little bastard from his lip.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
No lip.
No, it's not that he has no lip. He actually has quite a defined Cupid's bow, which is beautiful a lot of the time. But there's something about his lip. Hang on, I'm going to show Neil a photo just so we can get his reaction in the moment.
Okay.
Now, I've just shown Neil a photo.
So she's just showed me a photo of Annie and a photo of him. Yeah, Annie, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, I'm telling you now, that's why he did it.
What about his lip though?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, he looks like
it's like he's got like this like, face. Like it's just whingy,
yeah,
bitchy kind of like.
There's Cupid's bow and then there's, when it's pointing up to your fucking nose.
It looks like he looks snotty.
Yes.
He looks like a Raymond the Third.
Yes.
Raymond J. Clark the Third.
Yeah.
Little bastard.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So, oddity.
The Lazarus effect.
I know that.
Do you?
I've heard of that.
There was a movie by the same title. I've never seen it, but I believe very loosely based on this.
Okay. Would they have mentioned this in something like Big Bang Theory?
I don't know. I don't watch that show because it's shit.
Well, is it science?
I suppose biology, yeah.
Okay.
Like it's okay. So the Lazarus effect or phenomenon is an extremely rare occurrence where, after resuscitation efforts have been ceased, the person appears to resurrect.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Now, what actually happens is auto resuscitation, or the odd time when CPR has not even been administered. So basically, this isn't someone coming back from the dead. It's just spontaneous blood recirculation, but a bit delayed, usually within 10 minutes.
So it's a bit like jumpstarting your car, but the car doing it itself.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
Right.
Now, the name comes from the biblical story of Lazarus, who Jesus brought back from the dead.
That's where I know it from.
What are you talking, like you've ever read the Bible? So full of shit. But no, like it coming from that story, you know, it's a bit of a theatrical title in that Lazarus was dead and gone for days before Jesus got his hands on him. He wasn't in the process of dying, so that's a bit of a piss take. Maybe, you know, we should change the name. I could see some religious fanatic suing for misrepresentation or giving false hope.
Mm.
You know, that kind of way?
Yeah.
Now, between 1982 and 2022, there has been 76 recorded cases of the Lazarus effect across 27 countries, the youngest being 9 months old and the eldest 97. Most of these people died shortly afterwards. Some survived with brain damage, and a few were reported to have made a full recovery. Those who died afterwards survived anywhere from minutes to hours to days or months.
See, could you imagine that now? He's a witch!
What?
If someone like died and then just came back to life and it's like, well, he had no help, how the fuck?
You mean years ago?
He's a witch. Yeah.
Yeah, you say imagine that now.
Oh. Yeah. No, I meant like back in the day when they were...
100%, I was actually going to make that point.
Oh.
I can't even fucking imagine.
Yeah.
The uproar. So some of the causes of this phenomenon are thought to be hyperinflation, which is an excess of air in your lungs by rapid or forceful breaths, which takes time to be released, delayed drug action, and unobserved minimal vital signs, among others.
Well, delayed drug. So that's not natural.
What's that? What?
Right, if I've got an headache and I take some fucking paras, it's not an instant thing. It takes time for headache to go away.
Right.
So I didn't naturally, you know, get rid of my headache by myself.
What's the point you're trying to make?
So the whole point of this is like, it's a mystery, you know, it's, you know, a phenomenon, as you called it.
Yeah.
But the body resuscitates its sen. But if it's drugs, a delayed reaction from the drugs, then it's not the body, is it? It's the drugs.
Well, it's the effect it's having on your body.
Yeah. From the drug.
Yeah.
So that's not a phenomenon.
No, but it's the same thing with... it's the same thing with resuscitation. Someone is administering this to a person, yeah? But this is auto-resuscitation. Do you get what I'm saying?
Right. Okay.
Hmm. Now, of course, if you were to witness this happen to a loved one of yours, it would certainly give you some hope that they were going to live. But realistically, they probably won't. And so healthcare providers take some precautions to avoid upset. These include performing CPR for a minimum of 20 minutes, trying to avoid hyperinflation during CPR, and monitoring the person for at least 10 minutes after stopping CPR before declaring them dead. So yeah, although it may be distressing if you were to go through this with a loved one, it's not this big dramatic resurrection scene that some make it out to be.
Yeah, like Undertaker when he's knocked out and then he just sits up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's nothing like that. You're not like raising up or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's simply your blood begins to recirculate. There's something happening.
You literally
again.
Just be laid there and it's...
yeah. But like you brought up, I just can't stop thinking about how dramatic people in like the 1800s would have been if this had occurred.
Oh, Christ, they'd have killed you.
No wonder they had coffin bells.
I would be pissed that I would come back to life because now I'm going to get burnt alive. But, I was dead. I was happy.
Do you know what I was thinking? Was like, can you imagine it? Like the gossip in the village.
Yeah.
It'd be like, did you hear about Margaret? Sure, didn't she only go and wake up dead to find out she was actually still alive?